podcasting from Nashville Guitar Store in the heart of Music City, USA. Bringing you inspiration, education, and behind-the-scenes stories from prominent guitarists and others influential in the music profession. Sharing tales of their history, discussing guitars, their gear, their work, what's on tap for the future, and delivering wisdom we'll all appreciate. Your host is Marcia Ware Wilder, nationally recognized radio personality, singer, actor, and author.
Marcia Ware Wilder.
Yes, it's always so good to see you. So glad to have you on. This is kind of for our podcast listeners. It's kind of an inaugural because we're in our new digs. We've got video going. Jamie, you're the first one to hang out with us in our new studio, our new accoutrement, if you will. And let me tell y'all about Jamie. Jamie has worked with pretty much everybody. He's been in the Christian circles, worked with great bands like Tree 63 out of South Africa. Mark Slaughter Band is where he's really spending most of his road time. Is that fairly? Yeah, because
there's a couple road gigs, but Mark Slaughter Band is definitely on the
who
top.
Who else are you on the road with?
There's a Native American band called Broken Walls.
Okay.
I'm the token white man because I don't have Native blood. And then there's Evership.
Evership.
Now, you have an in-house guy here named Joel Grumblatt.
Yes.
Joel plays drums.
Oh.
And so
Joel's talents really know no bounds because Joel is the heart and soul of Nashville Guitar Store's refurbishment team. He is the dude.
He's Evel Knievel.
He is Evel Knievel.
That's all I can say.
I was just going to say, that's such a great video. So
I have seen it.
You know what? Yeah, we're just a sick group of people out here, and
we love it.
Yeah, it's like you don't even ask. Does insanity run in your family? We just go. You bet.
Welcome to the family.
Here at the NGS family, insanity runs. So welcome to our podcast. And we talked about this before we got things rolling. Before we hit the start button on anything, boo.
Boo.
What up with all the pink? Did pink? Because hang on, let me just show for video's sake. I've got my handy dandy pink Bassman bumper sticker, and I really wish, you know, we could get a close-up of that, but this is just absolutely fantastic stuff, and we'll be talking about Innocent Monday, Stories from the Garden, a little bit later, but what's up with all the pink, babe?
Well, it started because of a British bass player named Mark King.
Okay.
Level 42.
Oh, I love me some Mark King.
So I'm watching this video live at Wembley from 86, and out comes this pink bass, and I was sitting there going, okay, I'm into that. So I'm watching, and I'm sitting there going, okay, got it. And it's pink. And I'm like, oh, you know, I need one of those. So believe it or not, I actually found one really close to it.
Mm-hmm.
Just happened to be here in the States. They're made in Birmingham, England. They're not made in large quantities.
Right.
It's bright pink, and it's got LEDs where the dots flash and bounce when I play it.
Stop.
No kidding.
Okay, that, like, for anybody who's into Guitar Hero, that would be Guitar Hero on steroids.
And especially when you play it live, because it's a real guitar, not a toy.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. That would be, see, Guitar Hero would be, anyway, just saying, not pro, singer. Anyway, but that's
Diva real, singer.
that is so cool. So the pink came from that.
And I had the one pink bass. It took me 5 years to talk this guy into selling it to me.
Okay.
I waited for it.
Yeah.
Because I knew it
was
coming.
What tipped the scales? But finally got him to...
He needed some dough.
Well, there you go.
So I talked his price down just a little bit, and I ended up with it. So so I have this pink guitar in the rack.
Yeah.
And I have all these other colors, black, you know, these other things, white, red.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, okay, what would happen if I had every one of these guitars in pink? All the same models, all the same blah, blah, blah.
That is hilarious.
In pink. So one by one, I randomly just got rid of all the ones that weren't pink, and the next thing you know, I have a rack full of pink basses.
Dang.
So that's how it started. And, you know, it's morphed into all kinds
what
of
what does your wife
things.
Say about all it?
Oh, they're my
your
wife
family.
And kid, they're so
say,
used
they're
to
so
it.
They're so used to it, okay.
They're so used to it. They're just like, oh, okay. You know, so my Facebook page has pink Mustangs, pink.
Somebody
posted the Starship Enterprise in pink.
Okay, that's hilarious.
I'm like, okay, and there's pink Air Force jets, so I get tagged in everything that's pink. So
I think what's really cool about that is the running joke is it takes a really secure man to sport pink. And
yes, it does.
And so I don't think we can get much more secure than this, than the bald head and the spectacular goatee, the earrings, and it's just all you're missing is like a lot of skin art on your arms. That's all that's missing. But
no art,
you
are just fur.
Yeah. You're rocking the whole look and the base. So, okay, that clears it up for me because you and I go back a long way.
Long time.
Probably about 20 years.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, all the way back to when we both first started getting active in the music scene in Nashville.
When Otto Price walked up to me and said, "Hey, man, can you do me a favor?" I know what that means. That meant at that time.
That meant you got a sub.
I got a session. That's what that meant.
That's right.
That's what that meant.
And actually, Otto, we're going to get Otto on the show because Otto is back in the area from Atlanta. So I'm very excited about that. But back to you.
There you go.
Now that we have satisfied that, you are from Chicago?
Originally,
what
yes.
What part?
North suburbs. Libertyville. Okay. Mundelein, Vernon Hills area.
Okay. I was born at Mercy Medical, so Chicago, we have that also in common as well.
Yep.
My mom's side of the family, I was born there. They call me Chicago baby. It's all good. But tell me about the music scene in your community.
In Chicago or here?
In Chicago, when you were growing up.
Well, okay. Let's see. I was in school band, mm-hmm. played saxophone.
Okay.
And did that up to senior year. And I think I was 12. Yeah, I was 12. My mother has this old K upright bass.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing in a Croatian, which is a former Yugoslavian country, mm-hmm. orchestra. So okay. I was wearing the outfits for the country, doing the dances, and playing all these crazy songs and learning how to play their stringed instruments. And they needed someone to play bass. So out came the big 1942 K bass, and that was all there was to it. So having learned music on saxophone,
mm-hmm.
translate to bass clef,
yeah.
figure it out, and start thumping on the upright bass. And it took Black Sabbath to get me to electric.
Okay.
So to put this in perspective, from 12 I played on upright.
Mm-hmm.
When I was 14 and Geezer Butler made me go, ooh,
yeah,
you can't play that on an upright.
Yeah.
What do you do if you can't play on an upright? Well, I guess you better go get an electric.
Yeah.
So I rented an electric bass from the local shop and taught myself how to read bass clef and kicked it. And then from there, it was band after band after band with big hair, no hair, long hair. I wore a cape and a sparkling, glittery silver shirt.
No, you did not.
There's a picture on Facebook.
I got to find that.
You need to go find that.
Yeah.
You need to go find that. I was actually 17 or 18 in that picture. I was playing a heavy death metal kind of band for those days.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was like, so, you know, I had a Rickenbacker in my hand or I had a Fender or I had whatever. And that's where it was. So from there,
yeah.
you know, that was Chicago.
Yeah.
Then I came down here to go to school.
You
here
went to,
being Nashville, Tennessee.
Belmont.
I graduated from Belmont.
Because you know there are about 55, 11 bajillion colleges in Nashville. But most musicians, Belmont is where you go.
Go to Belmont.
So, yeah. All right. So but let me ask you before you go too far into your Belmont.
Dive, yes.
Into, That upright, does it still exist?
Yes, it does.
Where is it?
My mother still has it, and I will be getting it soon.
God bless mom. Was yep. your mom a musician?
My mother actually was an accordionist, and she had a combo before I was born.
So cool.
She bought the upright bass mm-hmm. because my dad would thump along with her, and she had a drummer and a tenor sax guy.
Okay.
And she had these big things, these big music stands with her name, Jackie, and letters that would flash on the front. She would play all over. She would play all over all the usual places. And at that time, we're talking the early to mid '60s.
Love it. So, are you essentially self-taught?
Initially, yes.
Yeah.
I did lessons for saxophone. I taught myself bass, and then when I came to Belmont, since we, Roy Vogt. I took lessons from Roy Vogt.
Future guest on the podcast.
He's an amazing dude.
Yeah,
he's one of a kind.
Oh, let me just tell you, I've already talked to him. Stories. Oh,
lots.
Gosh. We're just going to have to settle in when Roy Vogt comes on the podcast because we will be here. We're going to be here a minute.
Couch and bearskin rug. Chill and relax.
Just
get a hot
chill.
Cup of coffee in a fireplace.
Yep, that's all you need.
That's the story.
So who was you mentioned Geezer Butler.
Yep.
Who was? So, okay, let me ask another question. You started with saxophone,
yep.
but would you say bass was still your first love, even though you started on sax? Or can you appreciate saxophone?
I appreciate saxophone.
Yeah.
I think one of the most enjoy moments I had was figuring out who Jerry Mulligan was.
Yeah.
He's a Barry sax player. Yes. And I played Barry sax. Yeah. I started on alto and moved to Barry. And doing all the low notes is what kind of drove me around. It's like, oh, wait, I can play bass and I'm really low now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just, that was the transition point. That was the gravitational pull to the upright bass.
Yeah.
And then the electric took its toll.
So as far as bass playing goes, who was influencing you?
Well, besides Geezer Butler, Geddy Lee.
Yeah.
Here's that Rickenbacker again.
Yeah, there you go. Well, yeah, we got plenty to say about the Rickenbacker in just a second. But yeah, Geddy, we watched, my husband and I were watching the induction ceremony for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And back in
blah, 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 blah.
No, but so I back when I was in the 90s, I was in this band and we were all either fans of Yes or fans of
Rush,
thank you. And a friend of mine said, wouldn't it be hilarious if Geddy Lee and John Anderson like tried to do a duet, be like, oh my gosh, Fly By Night,
it's around about.
Yes.
And sure enough,
yep.
when Yes got inducted, Geddy was on stage, I thought, where is my friend Bruce? This is, all of our dreams are coming true. But
yes, indeed.
Yeah. So again, I confess this to Mama's having a moment.
It's all good.
I confess this to Tim Gaines when we had him on the show a while back. My knowledge of bass guitars is so minimal. So I'm going to consider this an education for me in terms of like distinguishing. I got a big question about 4-string, 5-string, 6-string basses.
And beyond.
Okay. So how high up can that go? Or is it like just based on, you know, just let your imagination run wild?
You know what? It's funny. The biggest I've seen is 12 strings that are different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a friend who has a 24 string.
Seriously?
Yes. They call it
Godzilla.
What
you going to do with 24 strings?
Well, it's kind of cool. It looks, I mean, it's huge. He calls it Godzilla.
Okay.
And he's part owner of a string company. So the original purpose was to design the instrument to where you'd have one of each of the string gauges on one thing and you could just play.
Okay.
And it's been a NAMM show favorite for a number of years. And
I
people
would love
just
to see that.
Flip out. I'll show you a picture of it when we're done. It's a big green monster. And but he's like I said, he part owns the string company. So it's one of those things that, you know, all the strings at the time.
I mean, I just want to see it played. I mean,
oh yeah, I got video of that I can show you.
Because, I mean, just trying to figure out what goes
up,
where.
You end up doing this kind of thing, you know, in some cases.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
But I mean, but that's the most, I think that's the most adventurous I've seen somebody do on a bass.
Well, okay, so as far as like, for those of us like me who are bass deficient or experienced and wanting to up your game.
Uh huh.
Does playing a 5 or a 6 string or more, does that basically say, okay, you're just taking it to the next level? Or is it okay to stay on a 4 string bass? Does that, is there like any prestige, I guess, to like adding a string to
it's
that
bass? It's personal choice.
Is it?
It really is, because when you start playing in the 5 string realm, the reason why the 5 string was even originated was because they were trying to tap the keyboard. Because the keyboard line, when you would play down low, you'd get those lower notes, and you couldn't go lower than E on a 4-string bass.
Yeah.
So you had 6 more notes underneath that you could hit with a B string.
Okay. Okay. Now, that much I do know. The B string kind of acts as a, it kind of brings everything together.
It gives you that low end, as you kind of do that, especially if you're grooving.
Yeah.
You can get those low notes in there as long as you're not riding them like crazy.
And that's a 5-string.
That's a 5-string.
Okay, what about a 6-string?
6-string is a string higher, so there's a C string that comes underneath the G.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you can do a lot of chording things, you can do, you know, more solo type things with a 6-string. Really, if you're playing in the basic register, you can play across it instead of having to move.
Yeah.
As opposed to having to climb the neck because you're looking for the higher notes, it becomes a matter of preference. And some people really love playing multi-strings above 4, which is cool. There are others who want to stick to a 4, and there's always this joke.
Yeah.
Well, Jaco only played with 4 strings, and Jaco Pastorius.
Oh, I know. Yes.
And we, you know, there's, we can all laugh and roll our eyes and say, yeah, whatever. It's one of those things, again, it's a pure choice.
Yeah.
Because if you want to do it, do it. If not, no harm, no foul.
Is there a stylistic thing? Like, do you find the 5-string bass in more, in like a 4-string bass, like say in just straightforward 4-on-the-floor rock, and then like a 5-string in say jazz? Is it, or is it, as you said, personal preference? Is it a stylistic thing, a genre thing?
I think it crosses both.
Okay.
Because a four-string is where everything originated.
Okay.
So you start there, and that means that, you know, before there were fives and sixes, everybody was playing a Fender or a Gibson or Rickenbacker or whatever.
Yeah.
And when five-string hit in the late 80s, you know, the first ones that I saw were the Yamaha BB-5000
mm-hmm.
and then the Music Man Stingray 5.
Okay.
Which I've had quite a few of those, too, over the years.
Okay. Well, you know what? I think I'm going to hit the pause button right there, and we will take a quick break. When we come back, the Pink Bass Man talks more gear, among other things, and we'll play another round of Take Your Pick. It's all coming up in part two of our conversation with Jamie Millard. I'm Marcia, and you are at NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
At NashvilleGuitarStore.com, paying full price for guitars is a thing of the past. Like dial-up internet. You'll find Epiphone, Fender, Gretsch, Ibanez, Taylor, and lots more. What you won't find is the big box store prices. Get yourself a killer guitar at a fraction of the retail price at NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
NashvilleGuitarStore.com. CD Stories from the Garden. That song is called Cage from the band Innocent Monday. It features the bass work of our guest today, Jamie the Pink Bass Man Millard. Hey, it's Marcia, and you are at NashvilleGuitarStore.com. How many basses can you say you have had in your lifetime? Can you give me a fair guesstimate?
I can.
Okay.
I can. Actually, I have to sidebar and give you the answer.
Sidebar, yes.
I wrote a book.
Yes.
And the book is called The Pink Bass Man's Quick Guide to Buying Vintage Basses. And that's just for Fender, Gibson, and Rickenbacker, because everybody really, really gets all giggly about those three.
Yeah,
they're the ones
that
they sport a lot of dough on that. I did that to accommodate people not getting raked over the coals,
mm-hmm.
trying to find some vintage piece that is overpriced for what it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, really, I forgot your question now.
Well, how many basses have you owned?
How many basses? Okay,
yeah.
That's right. Up to this point, I can honestly say I've had 1,457 basses.
Of those 1,000 plus, how many of them were Rickenbackers?
154, almost 10%.
Really?
Almost 10%.
I really, honestly, just based on just our pre-interview conversation and stalking your Facebook page,
sure,
and because I'm a stalker.
Stalker!
But also, Pink Bass Man. You know, your website, I would have thought that number would have been higher. What is it about the Rickenbacker that Rickenbacker?
Actually, they say backer, I say boxer because it's a German name. Even they go,
yeah. You
know, it's really Rickenbacker.
Yeah.
It's fine either way, whatever turns you on.
What about the Rick that turns
you on? There you go.
What about the Rick that turns you on?
Well, you know.
Tell us
everything about the Rickenbacker.
No, seriously, what is it about the Rickenbacker that is just so great for you? What are you looking for in a bass, and what does Rick do to bring you what you need?
It's the tone, and it's the sound of it, and there are people who love them and people who hate them.
Okay.
There's not really a middle ground. Some people go, yeah, it's cool, but I can't play one because it hits my forearm or does this or does that. Really, for me, it was Geddy Lee's fault.
Okay.
Because I was studying the Rush song so hard, and then the Chris Squire, because I did both.
I love Chris Squire.
I did the Yes Tunes, too.
Oh, may he rest in peace.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. I did
so
both of those.
So what Rush songs were you doing?
Vital Signs, which was actually a jazz bass. But one of the first concerts I saw actually was on videotape, was Exit Stage Left by Rush. And I'm sitting here looking at this black Rickenbacker going, I want one of those. That sounds amazing. You know, and so my 16th birthday, lo and behold, poof, there's a black Rick in front of me.
Your mom.
Uh-huh.
Your mom rocks.
They hook me up a little bit, yeah.
We may need to have mom on the show.
That would
we'll have you come back and bring your mom.
That would be entertaining.
Because any mom that understands her bases, come on now.
Yep.
So we're talking about the Rickenbacker, and it's basically a matter of tone that draws you to that particular brand of instrument.
Yep.
Anything come in a close second?
Well, let's see. A close second to a Rick probably, and this is going to be odd because the other spectrum would be a Fender Precision.
And why is that?
Because the Fender Precision is actually a big, meaty, beefy tone. These things are kind of like little twangy guitars.
Yeah.
The Rickenbacker is designed for twang.
Okay.
And the P-Bass is designed for woof.
Yeah. Okay, so when you play, like, say, a Mark Slaughter gig, what are you using?
For a Mark Slaughter gig...
I use seven different basses. No.
One per song. The double neck in the picture I gave you there is what I take out for the Slaughter dates.
Okay.
So that's actually a custom instrument that was made for me by a guy in Michigan by the name of Harold Cagle. HJC Customs is his brand. And he made that for me after we had some powwow because I had... That's a combination or a collection of three different basses, one of which is the Rick.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so right here, Josh, is where you're going to place just a little snippet of Mark Slaughter with Jamie playing on it, just maybe 15, 20 seconds, just of what I'll send you. So.
Shredfest, baby.
Shredfest, baby. All right, and here we go back into the interview. As far as, I'd asked this, but just kind of taking it around to another answer.
Sure.
Is it just tone that you're looking for in a bass? What is it when you're shopping? Because we all know you've shopped a lot for basses.
I shop a lot for basses.
What are you looking for?
I'm looking for neck profile. What that means is I want the neck front to back to be skinny and I want it to be reasonably flat.
Okay.
Because on my hand, that makes me play faster.
Okay.
And then I tie in the strings and how all that works. So yeah, I primarily look for neck profile. Everything else I can pretty much monkey with.
Okay.
Because I can't.
You've also expressed interest in a certain... You actually endorse the amp... let me get this right. Ampeg?
Ampeg.
Okay, so tell me about Ampeg. What is it about that particular brand? Why is that so special to you?
Ampeg is a classic sound. They've been around. The first bass amp that Ampeg made was in 1969. It was on the Rolling Stones tour as a prototype. And then they became really, really something after that.
Yeah.
And I've always kind of sort of had one tucked in here and there. They're just big, ominous, loud, gnarly-sounding amps, and you get huge cabinets, which I'm old school, so
yeah.
I want big bass boxes. Say that three times fast. And that's right. And I want my pant legs shaken. And
okay.
I want somebody to feel it here.
Right.
When the bass hits, I want their chest to be hurting.
Yeah.
Not because they're having a coronary.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm feeling.
Yeah.
I'm feeling. Tell me about your stage setup.
Okay.
And just like in terms of what all are you standing in the middle of, gearheads everywhere want to know.
Gearhead city.
Gearheads everywhere want to know what's your stage setup.
My stage setup is, well, if I have backline, then I usually request two SVTs and two 8x10s.
Okay.
That's guaranteed to blow your socks off at 10 paces. And then I have, depending on, again, which gig, I will use the double neck. I will bring out a Rick. On the very rare occasion that I'm playing something other than rock, I'll bring out the JD bass, which is the pink one with the flashing lights.
Yeah.
Those are for the funk and soul and groove gigs. That happens.
Yeah.
I see somebody's pained expression in the corner. See that little gleam on the bald head over there?
He'll be all right.
He'll be fine. Just remember, I'm holding your bass.
Mark Ports, ladies and gentlemen.
Think about Ace Frehley with the fire coming out and the flashing lights.
Pyrotechnics.
Isn't he in the hospital now? No, I'm just kidding.
Josh, you cut all that stuff off.
Yeah. Edit, Josh.
Edit.
So you mentioned, I love, you're giving me answers to a lot of all of my questions I've already got here, but you mentioned that you were old school in some respects, but is there any new technology that's kind of sneaking its way either into your stage or your studio?
Yes.
Tell me.
There is a little floor pedal that's made by Tech 21 called the Sansamp Bass Fly Rig.
Okay.
It's a little thing. It looks like a ruler, and it's five or six pedals built into this little bitty thing. And I've used that on the Slaughter dates, too, because I can run that, and I run wireless. So I can run all over the stage, hit a button, and keep going.
Yeah.
And I have my sound dialed in. So if for some reason, like, the backline company doesn't give me an Ampeg head, I've got the Ampeg dialed in. All I have to do is hit the button.
That's awesome.
And I can also use it for studio set, because I do.
So which do you prefer, studio or live?
Live.
That I just gave like a brief glimpse into what you're going to be experiencing at the end of the interview.
Of course.
Live is, there's something about live I think most of our guests have expressed. But it's interesting because they'll also talk about the alchemy that happens in the studio that you can't. But yeah, there's something really special about a live performance where you feel like, even though you might listen back 15 minutes later and you go, oh, what was I doing? In the moment, it just feels good.
It feels right.
It just feels right.
Yep.
So what is your greatest challenge as a bass player right now?
Let's see. Greatest challenge. Honestly, at this point, because of the way the music industry is, it's really a challenge to get good gigs,
mm-hmm.
Whether it be studio or live. It's really difficult because the industry has changed so much that unless you're going out with a name artist, it's very difficult to get things going. And even with a name artist, sometimes it can be a challenge. I mean, put that word in there. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Because people, there's a different mindset in the music industry right now. And obviously, you know, with the advent of all the digital things, you don't sell music as much. People just take it. So you really have to take your music to people to have them hear it. And then you're giving them an experience, you know, that they wouldn't normally get,
mm-hmm.
because if you're just putting on a set of headphones or picking up your MP3 and whatever, it's different than watching the person in front of you sweating all over you as they're bopping their head or doing what have you.
Yeah.
So I'd say for challenge right now, it's really just a matter of locating good, solid, continual gigs.
Do you feel like people just would rather have their music in their own personal headspace rather than going out and paying a ticket to see it live? What do you think? When you say the industry's changing, how does it appear to be changing to you?
Well, to me, it appears that, you know, as a writer, because I do writing and publishing.
Right.
It's very difficult to maintain that in a without sounding like a money grab, because it's not intentional. Without being able to do what we used to do, was make a living off of selling your album and doing these kind of things, you can't do that anymore.
Right.
And that's kind of disappointing. I mean, not from the financial standpoint only. It's more from the side that, you know, there was a lot more push, there was a lot more promotion, a lot more marketing,
mm-hmm.
a lot more just kind of general hype that made it exciting and made people really want to go and see and go check it out. And a lot of that's gone.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're, you know, I don't know, pick an artist from the modern stuff and put them up there. I mean, you've got a handful of artists that are always perpetually being pushed by the remainder of the big labels.
Yeah.
And the rest of them are just kind of making their own way.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a lot more automated, I guess, in the sense of back in the day.
Yeah.
Because there were more people involved for the process. There's less people involved, which is good in one sense, but for the actual ability to go do something, it's a little more challenging.
So how did you get the gig with Slaughter, Mark Slaughter?
That's a great story. I was actually working with a guy named Kevin Maxfield. He has a brand called J. Backlund Design Retronics Guitars. And the idea was I was working with him to put together a new instrument and get it out there and promote it.
Mm-hmm.
So he made me a pink one, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. and you know, and that one actually I gave to a friend of mine in the Netherlands. He still uses it profusely. I was on tour in Germany, another story. Anyway, Kevin said, we're going to film this video, and I want to talk about the guitars and talk about this and that. And so he said, meet me over. We're going to go meet Michael Wagner,
mm-hmm.
the producer.
Yeah.
And so we met at his place, and one thing led to another, and Michael Wagner has a Rickenbacker hanging on the wall.
Well, there you go.
And so I'm like, can I see that? And so I'm kind of looking, and I'm like, how's this thing sound? He goes, well, it's a little weak. I said, I think I know something that could fix that for you. He says, what do you need? I said, a screwdriver and a soldering iron. So I rewired his Rick.
You're MacGyver.
Pretty much.
You are the bassman's MacGyver.
Pretty much. So I rewired his Rick, and we did this interview, and he started doing, he works with Kemper, which is mm-hmm. the modeling amps, and he was doing his own little set of plugins, the Michael Wagner Rock Pack.
Yeah.
And I did all the bass for him on those. So all the bass sounds were modeled by me on that, and he said, he gave me some comment at one point. He's like, oh, you're a real bass player. I said, how's that? He said, well, you don't do this all the time. You do this.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, thank you. Wow.
Yeah.
What to say there?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, one of the producers that everybody knows is telling me that I'm a real bass player. Thank you. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Even though you knew it all the time, it's always nice to get that affirmation.
Well, it's always good. It's always nice to hear affirmation from someone who's been there, done that with all these different people.
Yes.
It's really encouraging. And so, needless to say, he said, I have someone you should talk with. I said, okay. So, next thing I know, I'm getting a call from Mark Slaughter. And so, it's like, yeah, okay, here we are. So I found out he lives 10 minutes from me. So he's like, come on over, let's make some noise. So I grabbed a bass and went to his house.
Did you feel like it was kind of like a prank call at first? It's like, is Mark's
no,
really? Okay, well,
no,
there you go. Because
no,
I'd be like, come on, who is this really? I'd be like, Mark Bortz. Who?
Mark Bortz? Who's that? I don't know you. So,
but that's still cool because he's in the Nashville area. So you
he is. So I went over to his studio and I took a bass with me and we sat down and he's like, let's make some noise. Okay, cool. So then he said, you know, Michael recommended you, et cetera, et cetera. And we started writing a song. And then, you know, it kind of turned into we wrote another song. And that song is actually on the Mark Slaughter CD Halfway There. The song's called Reckless. And so that is, so we, I could say co-write, you know.
Yeah.
Because we had a lot of fun with that. I wish I had a CD for you on that one because yeah. I didn't get a chance to find them. I have them on vinyl because they're on vinyl and picture discs.
I'm seeing, aren't you just glad vinyl's making a comeback?
You should see my album collection.
I really, I'd love to. That would be, that's just, that.
I have just, everything from the spinners out.
That's a whole other interview. We could take all day on that one. So yeah. There's a couple things. First of all, you've got a line of clothing. You got swag.
I
clothing,
swag.
Guitars, go yep. Pink Bass Man.
Yeah.
What you got?
I've got shirts for guys and gals, long sleeve, short sleeve. I'm working on a couple of other little secrets that haven't been put out yet.
Fine.
Oh, yes. Because that's, you know, because I've had people that, you know, they want a pink baseman shirt.
Yeah.
Great. I got that. I've got 8x10s. I have all the standard stuff.
Yeah.
And so I'm working on a few sneaky things. But,
cool. And they know, and they can be...
They're on my Facebook music page, which is, so it's Jamie Pink Baseman music page.
And we need to know, you need to note that his name is spelled J-A-Y-M-I. It is
Ka-ching.
Not... It is not J-A-M-I-E or anything you're used to. But Jamie, I will tell you, is not like anything you're ever used to. This brother is rare and unique and wonderful. J-A-Y-M-I. Millard. That is his name. Look him up. His pink bass. It's pinkbassman.com, right?
It's pinkbassmanmusic.com.
Music.com. You're at. So I just would just go there. Check out his swag. Check out his guitars. He also. I want to make sure we get this in because your endorsements are pretty impressive. JD Custom, HJC Custom Basses, Ampeg Amps, and in his words, anything that can be painted pink. Any music kazoos. Paint them pink.
Been there, done that.
And you'll get his endorsement. But nevertheless, he is. Those are all his things. And plus the Pink Bass Man's quick guide to buying vintage basses. And lastly, tell me about Innocent Monday. I am looking at this. Stories from the Garden is a CD that came out in 2014.
Yep.
Tell me about this.
Okay. Innocent Monday was a band that I put together with a drummer friend at the time. And we agreed to write a record. And we wanted to see what would happen. So we wrote that album together. We split all the copyrights, did all that stuff. Brought in, he's a drummer and he was also the singer.
Mm-hmm.
So we had some pretty interesting motion with that record when it came out. We went through all of the channels, you know, all of the kind of promote yourself kind of channels. And mm-hmm. we sat at number one on Reverb Nation for over 6 weeks.
Awesome.
With a song called Cage and then another song called Ashley Speaks.
Yeah, that one caught my eye. That title caught my eye. What's that one about?
There's a story behind that
There's
one.
There's always a story. Go.
There is. When I originally wrote that song, I was actually going to Belmont,
mm-hmm.
and I met this girl named Ashley. She was sitting in front of me in a class. Don't even ask class. I can't remember. But I was sitting behind her, and she introduced herself. And I looked into her eyes. Her eyes were like ice blue,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, like coyote eyes or like Siberian husky eyes. And I just read this story. So I wrote it down.
Yeah.
And the story of Ashley Speaks was about Ashley as a young girl who experiences abuse.
Okay.
And the basic culmination of the song is it explains a little bit of it. And then in the end, there's healing.
Mm-hmm.
She walks through a moment where she comes to a realization that it's not... doesn't have to be that way.
There are traces of the past. Ashley speaks her mind. There's a heart that's deep inside. Ashley speaks her mind.
been, all my questions, some you've answered before I've asked, and some have just, it's just flown by. I do want to know about your most embarrassing moment on stage.
Let's see, most embarrassing moment.
Pick one.
Pick one. There's a joke in musician circles that if you screw up and play the wrong note, play it twice.
Yes.
And that way, you know, if you play it twice, everybody figures you were going to do it that way, or play it three times if you're really out there. Play it four times if you're doing jazz. That's the rule, yes.
I've never heard that one. That's good.
That's right. Because if you screw it up four times, you're playing jazz.
Yes, ta-da. There you go.
So there have been moments. I'm trying to think of one specific that would stand out. Because, I mean, a moment is a moment.
Yeah.
And one of the things that has been said when you make a moment is not if you screw up or when you screw up. It's how you recover. So if you recover from it, hence the two or three or four times repeating it.
Yeah.
To where it doesn't look like you intended to, you know.
Yeah.
So it. I'm trying to think of one specifically because, I mean, there's a bunch. I mean, because we all have those times where we just go, oops.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, look, I did this. Oh, I'm up here. You know, no. One immediately doesn't jump off because I have to think about it really hard to figure out, okay, how did I cover? What did I actually do that I had to recover from?
I just love that you're like, I meant to do that. No, that's fine. You just,
Yeah. I was intending for that note to be there.
I was feeling deep inside myself. I was like really turning inward.
I was out in the zone.
Yeah, that's where I love the musicians that take themselves just a titch too seriously. Mm. That's where they go with that. You are not that man.
No.
You are not the man.
No.
So, okay, so what's happening next for you? Because I know you're on the road with Mark right now.
I'm on the road with Mark. Yeah. Innocent Monday actually has had a hiatus.
Okay.
The person that wrote the record with me is no longer with me.
Okay.
So he's off doing his thing. So what we're doing is we actually have filmed a video. Mm-hmm. And I've written a new song that is in the vein of Ashley Speaks, kind of deals with the same subject matter, because when that song came out, it was so intensely heard by mostly females.
Okay.
And we would have emails or messages or what have you where ladies would tell us that they were crying because that was them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it made an impact.
Right.
So I didn't want to recreate the song. I didn't want to steal the song, because even though I own it, I wanted to come up with something different, but we have a really amazing set of footage that we shot not too long ago with a friend of mine and her daughter.
Okay.
And they look like they could be, I mean, the resemblance for mother and daughter is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I have the little girl and I have the lady. And we go through and we talk through the cycle of how things happen, when happened, and we don't say what happened. I'll leave the rest a surprise. But the song will come out with the video. It'll launch together. And, you know, we'll see how that rolls. Beyond that, I'm also filling in on the side. I sit in with a guy who I affectionately call Country Metal.
Yeah.
His name's Ryan Weaver.
Okay.
He is a former military chopper pilot. He's retired Army. He's an amazing dude. His band is a lot of fun.
Okay.
And his bass player has a big beard, too. Only his is blonde. mine turns pink like that picture sometimes.
I was just
going to
say, but nobody can sport the pink.
Nobody does the pink, dude.
Nobody does the pink like you do.
Well, you know, maybe I think if, you know, Mark gets married one of these days, we should dye. We have him grow a beard. We could, you know, that'd be the pink bass man touch to Mark's wedding ceremony.
That
look, I've got
it.
This pink thing on my chin.
Fantastic.
So,
you cut that out too, Josh.
Most assuredly.
Most
assuredly. You also have, I also thought this was really cool. You have a YouTube channel where you offer your expertise on how to buy. I mean, it's kind of the visual version of your Pink Bassman's Guide to Buying Vintage Guitars. You have a YouTube channel,
mm-hmm.
which is youtube.com/bass. Jaymi.
Yep,
so again,
Jamie.
don't forget, his name is not spelled like you think it is. Jaymi. But looking forward to delving into your Pink Bassman clothing. Just looking at it's at pinkbassmanmusic.com.
And then the Facebook page is where the clothing is.
And the Facebook page is where you can get his clothing.
Yep.
Jamie, I cannot believe that this has gone by as quickly as it has, but we are now at my favorite part of the interview, which is our, as I like to call it, our audio Rorschach test. There is no right answer.
Sure.
Okay? It's either this or that. So we call it take your pick.
Okay.
Get it?
Got it.
Because we're guitar people and it's a pick and we're taking it. And you know, I'm a bass player. I don't need no stinking pick.
But I do use them with Slaughter.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I was going to say you'd have to.
Now, I think the funny thing is for Pick, the guitar player for the Mark Slaughter band, Mike Himmel is his name.
Yes.
Check him out too. MikeHimmelGuitarist.com. He's amazing. We mess with picks.
Yes, okay. See, education happens here at NashvilleGuitarStore.com because your hosts don't know nothing about basses. I'm just saying.
So we incorporate guitars because the bass player knows a little something about guitars.
There you go. There you go. All right. Well, seriously, now it's time to take your pick.
Okay.
First question, Led Zeppelin or The Who?
Zeppelin.
Bass strings, round or flat?
Round.
Coke or Pepsi?
Neither.
Ooh, what do you put in there? Water?
Water.
Are you a water guy?
I'm a water with lemon guy.
Water with lemon. Let me just also explain, he has gone through an amazing physical transformation. Jamie,
I was large in charge.
He was in shape. Round is a shape.
Round is a shape.
Round is a shape.
And
no,
it rolls.
Seriously, no, just very quick, putting a pause on this.
Yeah.
How did you do it?
Diet and exercise.
Diet. Well done, you, because you look amazing.
Nothing
You're in great
else.
Health. The beard looks full. The eyebrows look great. You're just looking good. All right.
So
no Coke, no Pepsi. He's a water with lemon guy.
Water
all
lemon
right.
guy, yep.
So peanut butter, smooth or chunky?
Ooh, I got to tell you a peanut butter one. Smooth, but there's a chocolate peanut butter.
Oh.
It's made by the Peanut Butter Company. I'm not endorsing them or whatever. I'm just saying, get a spoon and a jar of this stuff, and I'll see you in a week.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that really was kind of an endorsement.
But it's good peanut butter.
But it's good peanut butter. All right, we've already talked about this, live or studio?
Primarily live.
Okay. Toilet paper, over or under?
Over.
Toothpaste, squeeze from the bottom of the tube or the middle of the tube?
Top of the tube.
Go talk to my husband.
That's all right.
All right, we've kind of touched on this. Amps, Acoustic 360 or the Ampeg SVT?
See, that's hard. I would say Ampeg because of I have an endorsement deal. Mm-hmm. I've had 360s.
Okay.
They are wicked cool. And then I happen to know a guy who still makes them.
So
for what I do, the Ampeg is appropriate.
All right. 4 a.m., get up or go to bed?
Get up.
Geddy Lee or Cliff Burton?
Geddy.
Bass riff, Taxman by Paul McCartney or Walk on the Wild Side by Herbie Flowers?
Herbie Flowers.
My man. Ladies and gentlemen, Jamie Millard and his Rickenbacker and his borrowed Rickenbacker. Give us a little something. Give us a little something. Something.
Well, that's your Walk on the Wild Side because it's two bass lines.
Yes.
It's two bass lines.
Yes.
Because it's electric and upright.
That's true.
So it'd be so. That's how it's played, but you're playing with two basses because one's playing a low and one's playing
that's
above.
That's true. Yeah.
On third.
Okay. I didn't even think about that.
Yes.
Well, sweetie, thank you for being on our show.
Nice to see you.
Always good.
Been
to
only 20 million years.
I know. I'm so glad that this was like a way to get us together
and
talk about our favorite, which is making good music.
Yeah. Thank you, Marcia, and thank you, NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
Dedicated to bringing you inspiration, education, and behind-the-scenes stories from prominent guitarists and others influential in the music profession. To hear more, subscribe to the Nashville Guitar Store podcast in iTunes. Go to NashvilleGuitarStore.com or find us on Facebook and Instagram.